All right, at the end of this week's podcast, the one you're listening to right now, we have an interview with Tim McGraw. He's got a brand new song called Standing Room Only. So stick around after the closing jingle to hear that.
And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind. So they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast.
Ah, it's a podcast. That's what it is.
Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba's podcast.
Yes, the tone deaf guy singing the loudest today. Yes. If you love music, you need to download the Pickle Jar app. Show some gratitude. Show some love to your favorite artists, your favorite bands, your favorite comedians. It's a great way also to support causes around town. You know, if you're doing a fundraiser or something, Pickle Jar is the way to go. That way you get all of the money that people want to give to you. Plus, you can watch exclusive content you can't find anywhere else. Check it out if you got an iPhone or a Droid. Picklejar.com, and I got a new gold, everybody.
He worked so very hard. So very hard.
What was that?
What was that?
Some guy, it was like his grandma or somebody or his mom or somebody. He was working really hard, and he was so proud of him. And so she was so happy that it made me happy. She's crying because he worked so hard.
He worked so very hard. So very hard.
And
so
I figured...
What huh? She said at the end,
she said, so very hard.
He worked so very hard. So very hard.
I don't know
to
why.
Get ahead?
I thought it was so very hard, like she just repeated herself. I don't know. But
I don't know.
I just enjoyed it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make that a gold.
Yeah, it's not the best one.
It's not the best one, but it's a new one.
Killer Bee's with us. Hey, man, can you hear?
Yes, I can, sir. Thank you so much.
It's good to see you, man. Welcome back into the podcast.
Hey, thanks, man. It's good to see y'all.
You've got a lot of stuff going on. You have look at you, sporting your Zanies hoodie.
You know what? I'm the king of kissing up.
You get so much free stuff, just like us.
Yeah. It's a learned art form.
It really is, man.
You know, used to it be like, oh, it's a cool-looking sweatshirt. Then it became, dude, I need that sweatshirt.
Man, hook me up. Yeah. Then you just start stealing it.
That we don't call it stealing. We call it
procurement.
Thank you. Yeah, because I started the sentence before I knew what we were going to call it. That was a good save.
Stealing. And see, that goes back to the moonshiners thing.
That's right.
See,
right,
we don't call it stealing. We call it stilling.
So see, Bees, full circle.
Bees used to have like a bit part on Moonshiners where he was just like Mark and Digger's buddy. And now you're like the star of it, taking the whole thing over.
You know what? They have drastically increased my presence, if you will, on the show, and I've kind of inherited one of the sweet spots on there. So it's really been neat, man. It's been a hoot. So season 7 for me, season 12 for the show. That's Moonshiners on Discovery Channel, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesdays.
Do you get
8 p.m.
Do people recognize you at like more because
of
the TV show?
I got recognized in Bucky's.
Oh, really?
And awesome.
And
wow.
There is so much eye candy in Bucky's. You get recognized there, dude. I've been recognized this past week at Golden Corral.
All right.
At Bucky's and at Walmart. And in the hotel lobby.
Nice.
So, I can't go anywhere. I can't go nowhere.
Just leave me alone, paparazzi.
The paparazzi mobile only works on Thursdays. Yeah. And it's so funny. It's low tech. The guy uses an Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh,
so if you don't want him to have your picture, you run. And when he chases you, the race is
right.
That's what I learned.
How long have you been ready for that joke?
Seven seasons.
7 seasons.
are you doing any? What are you watching on Netflix? You doing any kind of like? Are you into a series?
No, I am not. Man, I work so hard, and when I get home off tour, I like to just recluse and just kind of. I will watch BattleBots.
I love BattleBots. Man, I do too.
So that's. You know, that I watch Ridiculousness to see all the blooper videos of people being stupider than I usually am.
Do you ever get on? You should get on just like regular. You have a smart TV?
Yes.
So you can download different apps and things, right?
Correct. So
you should download YouTube, just like the YouTube app.
Yeah.
And sign up and get like an account or whatever. And just start going through and searching things that you are really into.
Right.
And then it will learn what you like. And then pretty soon it becomes
It'll suggest
a network, yeah, it just basically.
You, the algorithm
giving you what you want.
Yeah, and you can watch full-on movies and clips. And
mine is full of alien conspiracy things.
Nice.
It's full of that Medium girl. Megan, remember the one that talks to the alien and like has conversations? Glasnost or whatever his name is saying that blah, 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 and she gives us updates on what's going on in world politics through the aliens' eyes. They are in control, so they're taking care of business. We're safe for now, but just stay vigilant, people.
Yeah. Yes, right. Indeed.
Do you believe
in
all that stuff?
Maybe. God works in mysterious ways. He may have more than just me.
You ever watch that? What is that show where the guy does the archaeology thing?
Ancient Aliens.
Ancient Armageddon or archaeology or something like that. But anyway, this guy goes back and he's saying that the pyramids are actually built upon older pyramids. And basically, it's proof that we had very intelligent, very advanced civilizations here on Earth well before the Ice Age even.
Oh,
yeah, it's fascinating. And it goes through all these different pyramids, and they show that they're like, you know, like and just a Native American, like an Indian mound. They're like, no, these were actually old pyramids. And you can look at the way they're aligned to the stars. They tell you how old they are because they can say, well, this one points to the North Star, which would date it at, let's say, 15,000 years ago or whatever.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing.
I wonder what ruined their civilization. You think it was TikTok?
Maybe.
Probably like syphilis.
Maybe. Probably.
Hey, I like YouTube a lot, though, while we're talking about that. I learned how to remove an appendix watching YouTube. You sharpen the edge of a spoon on the pavement. Uh-huh. Then you rinse it off.
Right.
Then you make that incision to reach in there with your fishing pliers, you know, and then part with two, like, wait a minute, this is hooked to something. Uh-huh. So then you have to go to part two on YouTube.
Have you got there yet? Or are you just on one?
No, yeah, the patient's just waiting.
Okay,
just waiting patiently.
Yeah, you want
to. You're like, I don't have any service.
You want to hold pressure on this.
Hang in there. So, I didn't realize that.
Bite this towel.
Killer was an ambulance EMT.
I worked on you in the back of the ambulance. I did that for 3 years, and that very exciting, very eye-opening gig to have. You learn about the consequence of your actions or of other people's actions. Uh-huh. When you work in a 911 ambulance.
Was there like, would you go home and you just kind of be like, ugh?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the trauma that first responders go through will manifest itself in all kinds of different ways. Yeah.
Can I add something as a first responder myself? I would like to say something because what is the one thing, and you're going to know this exactly, the one thing people, when they find out that you did that, they always say, what's the worst thing you've seen?
Right.
That is the worst thing to ask somebody who's, you know, dealing with that trauma compartmentalized.
Who does not want to dwell on that.
Right. So, you know what? I mean, dude, I know you can relate. Somebody will say, what's the worst thing? I click right to that moment. I hear everything. I smell everything. It's all very vivid. A better question to ask a first responder, a cop, a firefighter, EMT, whatever, maybe even veterans, instead of saying, what's the worst thing you've done? Say, what's the funniest thing that happened to you on a shift?
Right.
Because everybody's got those stories as well, and they're much better.
What's the funniest thing that ever happened to you on a shift?
The funniest thing?
World famous comedian.
Oh, my gosh. I don't, you know, it's thinking back, a lot of the funniest things didn't stick with me. Like just the weird stuff. The first time I ever went to a suicide attempt, the lady had cut her wrist, and to this day, this was one of my first ambulance calls. To this day, I vividly remember the sound of her blood on the tops of my shoes, like that, while I was trying to.
That's what I'm saying. That's why you never ask the worst thing, because those are the things that come to mind,
and they'll be with you forever and ever, man. Just. You know, my Achilles heel was when they were throwing up in the ambulance.
Puke is the worst. Puke is way worse than blood.
Yes, I was able to deal with lots of trauma because, you know, you're in the zone right there. But when they're puking, you're like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, here, you're going to have to hold pressure on this. I'm going to look out the window.
So if you weren't doing comedy, what would you do? What would be your...
Well, you know, I might have tried to do something in the medical field. Yeah. I might would have done that.
Why'd you get out of it, the 3 years you did?
It was low pay.
Okay.
You know, it was low pay, and I was young. I was the youngest person in the state of Mississippi to ever do that job.
How old were you?
17 when I started.
Wow.
I was a senior in high school, and I worked every other night and every other weekend and would get to school late continuously because I would be on an active call lots of times. So they waived the whole tardy rule and all that. But the coolest thing about that was I had an English teacher that would have me come up to the front of the class and tell why I was late. And to me, it was just cool because I got to tell all these gory stories, you know, rock star type stuff. Yeah. But in retrospect, it let me verbalize what I had been through the night before. And I think it was really a cathartic thing for me to be able to do that.
Yeah. So, when did you start doing comedy?
The last weekend of June 1982.
How old were you?
I don't know. I was born in 53. I'm 69 now. I'm in my 41st year
of
doing stand-up, which amazes me that I've been in this business this long.
So were you always just kind of funny?
I was, since I was a little baby. The earliest memories in my memory banks, and I've probably shared this with y'all, I lived in a funeral home in Kosciuszko, Mississippi. My dad was a funeral director and an embalmer. And I had the run of the place, and as a toddler, I remember seeing sad people come and go from where I lived, and I learned that I could do silly little cute stuff, and the crying people would stop crying and come over and talk to me and smile.
Wow.
And I think that that's what fuels my compulsion to this day, to make people smile and laugh. I don't do good around stoic people, because I just feel like something's wrong. I think we should all start our day happy and elated that God has given us another beautiful day, at least until 11:30 or so, when we realize it's going to suck like yesterday.
But at the first of the day, you're not real sure. It could go either way.
Right. Yeah, but I think we should all have that mindset. Matter of fact, when the kids were all growing up at the house, they would always fuss me, "Dad, quit acting so bubbly in the morning."
And That's my kids.
I'm like, "You're right, because I am acting." And we have the choice each and every day to start that day in a good mood or a bad mood.
Sure. So did someone tell you that you should get into stand-up?
My whole life. My entire life was wittiest in junior high and in high school and all that kind of stuff.
Specifically stand up, or just you should get into acting?
You should be a comedian. That was the word. That was the terminology. And I lived in Jackson, Mississippi, and there was no such thing as comedians in Jackson, Mississippi.
There's not Google back then, so you couldn't go, how does one start in comedy?
So what did you do?
Well, I worked pool halls, biker bars, anything I could do. I did 311 performances before I ever saw a comedian in person.
Wow.
So, and
wow.
That,
what do you mean? I don't know what you mean.
There were no comedy clubs, right? So I was working in a music store, playing blues guitar on weekends, selling guitars, doing guitar techie type stuff, and went to Chicago on music store business and blew off going to see Steve Morse and the Dixie Dregs one night, and went to Zany's Comedy Club downtown Chicago, and saw first time to walk into a comedy club, and it changed my life just walking through the door. Because all of a sudden, here's a place where the chairs are turned toward the stage, and the people are sitting looking to that stage, and they're there to listen. They're not there going, "Who's this jackass trying to be funny while I'm trying to pick up women?"
Yeah.
So the headliner was Jay Leno. This was back when he was still on the club circuit.
So the first time you ever walked into a comedy club in your life, 28, 29 years old, Jay Leno was the guy on stage?
Correct. Correct. And most of his act was, "What's your name? Where are you from? What do you do for a living?"
He would do all crowd work?
Yes. Incredibly good at crowd. And I say all. I'm sure he had some material, but what sticks out of my head was all the crowd work that he was doing and how good he was.
I wonder if that's what made him a better host. Because whenever I watch like late night TV, I look at these guys and then I'll go back and I'll watch clips of Leno and Carson and not even highlight shows. I'll just go find like random episodes. And when you're watching those shows, you realize how much better he was than pretty much everybody that's out right now.
Right, because he had all that scar tissue you get from being on comedy club stages, plus all that muscle that you build by being on comedy club stages. And a host hosting is a really hard job. So you've got to be able to think on your feet because nothing ever goes exactly the way the script reads. One of the people that I always thought was an incredibly good host was Arsenio Hall.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic, man, had great rapport with anybody that was on his show. So that's an art form that is kind of overlooked. And on the comedy club circuit, generally, the newest, most inexperienced guy is the host of the show.
Yeah.
So when I moved to Nashville and worked out of Zany's, I did one time a solid month just as the MC, just because I needed to get that emceeing skill down. And in other venues, I was the middle act or the headliner. But Lenny Sisselman told me and hipped me to the fact that you've got to learn how to MC, because that's a whole different art form that can pay off it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So that
it is hard because we have to host things, and hosting is completely different than what we're doing
now. It's
not
like radio. It's not where you have a conversation. It's a one-way conversation most of the time. Every once in a while I go, "You having fun tonight?" Yeah, or something like that.
And everything's overdone and big movements and that kind of thing, and it's I don't like it.
It's hard. It's very hard. Yeah. And like I said before, and nobody sticks to the script on that. You know, you got people doing stupid stuff in front of you while you're trying to MC, so a lot of trial and error that goes on. That's one of the reasons it takes so long to get good at stand-up. You cannot practice it unless you're in front of people under duress. Now, you can memorize. You can stand in front of a mirror and try to memorize what you're going to say, but you're not under duress. Mm-hmm. When you're in front of people, it's a packed room or even a little crowd, and you've got to do good. You're under stress. Your breathing is different. Your motor skills are different. And so that's the learning curve, is being under fire time and time again and not giving up just because they break your heart the first 1,000 times.
Well, and I was a singer, songwriter. I was in bands and played guitar. You obviously play guitar. And people say, "Oh, it's just like that." No, because if you suck, if you're not having a good night and you're the singer, it doesn't require the audience to make you good. Like, it's so much different in comedy. If people don't laugh, you're not funny. And if you're not funny, people don't laugh. It's like this self-feeding thing. And it's really strange. Like, you need the crowd to laugh at you for your jokes to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an intimacy that you need with the crowd in any type of spoken word.
It's almost trust. It's like you have to be able to get them to trust you to feel okay to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you build that trust, and it's really that first probably 2 minutes of a comedy show is the most important thing. Once I feel like if you can get them to buy in, you've got them for the rest of the time. But I would think as a comedian, that's the toughest thing to walk out.
And that's
out.
Why you have somebody like me or whoever the new guy is that you throw out there, because that's the hardest part. Going out there to
get them in the mood to laugh,
stepping up in a cold crowd.
The first, go ahead.
Yeah, that's why they call it a warm up act.
Yeah, the first,
you gotta warm up the crowd, and then by the time
thank you, Patrick.
Bees comes out. Well, but I mean, you know.
No, did you know that's why they call it?
Well,
I didn't know if you knew.
Most people don't know that. Most people don't think that way.
I think they figured it out.
And here's the thing: no matter where you are in the lineup, you're a different entity to that audience, and they've not seen or heard from you yet. And what you really want to do is, right out of the bat, first 60 seconds, be their friend. You've got to go up and not be uppity, not preach at them, not tell them what you're upset about. You need to go up and be their buddy right off the get-go. Because
like if we're a club, Killer, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're a club. You walk into our room, what are you going to do to kind of get us going? I think this is fascinating, like, you know, like to break the ice.
Well, yeah, you look at it like this. Here's how I treat it. Let's say you were just introduced to someone. You've never met them before. If I'm introduced to somebody, I don't immediately start riffing, doing shtick at them. I go, "Hey, man, nice to meet you." If they're home, I'm like, "Man, this is great. I love your house. Good going. Thanks for having me."
Yeah.
You act human and you act humble that – the people have paid to come see you, and you let them know right up front that you're not, and I'll use the term uppity, because that's one of the biggest dangers is acting like you know more than them, or them perceiving that. Because if you look at just the physics of it, the performer is on stage above the audience. The audience is seated. You're standing above them. You have a microphone.
Like you're lording over them.
Correct. You're under bright lights. So the possibility, the potential to come off as arrogant is so much more intent. It is so much more of a, what am I trying to say here?
Possibility. Thank you.
It's right there.
I mean, it's almost a given that you're in charge. When you walk out there,
right,
it's your stage.
Right.
It's your room.
Correct. And so my philosophy, and there's cats that are wildly successful doing stand-up that do it different. So I'm not saying it's my way or the highway. But what I do is I try to go out and be their friend and act like I just met them and I'm cordial. And that's the way I do it. They've got to like you. I've worked with so many cats that were brilliant comedians. And after the show, I'll ask people, what'd you think of something? We didn't like him. Uh-huh. Not we didn't like his material.
Wow.
So you have got to make people want to hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Likeability is a huge thing in life, really.
Yeah.
And actually, what you're suggesting probably isn't a bad lesson for all of us to learn just in life in general when you meet somebody new. I mean, you know, if you're humble, if you're whatever, they're going to like you more. If you're like, hey, nice to meet you. Tell me a little bit about yourself, you know, whatever it is. If you show interest in that person, like you would show interest in that crowd when you're going in and being their friend, then I think they're going to be more receptive to whatever else is coming afterwards.
Yeah, I agree, man. And here's the thing with the comedy clubs, the way they have evolved over the years, too many comics rely on slamming somebody in the crowd. You know, old-timey days, people would come to the show, and I'd talk to them before the show. I'd see them come in. Okay, great. These days, like, hey, if you want somebody to pick on, you know, because so many comics have such a reputation of picking on people,
yeah,
slamming,
finding somebody to make fun of.
And, you know, to me, that's not the art form. It is so easy, in my opinion, to make smart aleck remarks about things as opposed to being an artist about things. I mean, it's so easy to get laughs because you're making fun of somebody who's wearing a weird jacket or whatever.
So have you noticed that you've changed and you've evolved in that, right, since you started?
Well, yes, because when you're first starting out, you don't have the experience, mm-hmm, and your bench of material is not deep enough, and you have to go for whatever, you know, laughs, whether they're cheap or not, mm-hmm, that you can get. And there's still room for crowd work. There's still room for somebody to say something silly and for me to say something silly or back.
Yeah. Do you have things like you have ready to go when someone, like a heckler, says something?
Used to, we all had stock heckler, uh-huh, lines.
Yeah.
Which I don't get heckled much. First of all, I hardly ever get heckled. And my definition of someone heckling is somebody being rude to you. You know, you suck, you know, whatever. That's heckling, not somebody just thinking they can talk to you because you're being very personable with them.
So do you find that when you go on and you're humble and you befriend everyone, so now if you do have a heckler, you have the rest of the people on your side, and they're going to turn on them and maybe boo them for trying to heckle because they already like you. They don't know this person.
Well, even if I get heckled, I try not to let it go there. I don't believe people will speak out of turn in a crowd like that unless for some reason in their life they need attention. And so my philosophy is I treat them with love. I do not like slamming people. Mm-hmm. It's too easy. It doesn't take art. It doesn't take skill, really, to do that.
Lowest common denominator.
Yeah, so correct, low-hanging fruit. And so if somebody heckles me, I try to be cordial to them.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Let me finish my show.
Yeah.
But Bees literally, is too nice. Well.
Now it works. Because he is. That's who he is.
That's
you
who
have to
I am.
Be who
right.
You are.
Right.
And yeah. So is. With Patrick going on stage or going on tour and doing some dates with you and all that kind of stuff, did you guys talk about like what you're going to, like your set? Do you talk to him about like his set?
No, because I don't want to hurt his feelings.
Yeah.
No, Bees gives me a lot of a positive reinforcement. Like I'll come off stage because there's usually somebody between me and Killer. Okay. So, because I'll usually open and then we'll usually have another comedian. I don't know if we're going to have somebody with us in Louisiana or not, actually, if it's just the two of us.
Yeah, I think we're the only, I don't know.
But like our friend Dan does shows with us and we've done and stuff like that. So while he's on stage, Bees will come up to me and say, oh, that really worked well tonight. Or you tried a new punchline in that middle second and it's positive reinforcement.
So you're paying attention. Watch. You pay attention to Patrick doing his thing?
Yes, I do. And I also include Patrick in my pre-show prayer every time we go out. And
like Madonna does?
No, it's different.
No,
I dress
different.
Oh, okay. I didn't
we mean it. Oh, gosh. That was awful.
Nice.
But Patrick could wear that same bra, that cone bra.
Oh, yeah. I fill it out better
but it
than
doesn't
she does.
Poke out as far.
No, it doesn't.
It's more rounded.
It's harder to see.
Are you concerned about, Patrick, when you go on stage, like what you're wearing, how you appear? Are you self-conscious?
You know what? I wore a T-shirt one time. Honestly, because Bubba told me to. I had this funny T-shirt that had two pictures of Taylor Swift on it and said, "Do you like my tay-tays?"
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's and Bees
I wouldn't do
got
that.
On me and goes, Don't wear a T-shirt on stage. Dress like you're there, like you're, you know.
Important.
You're the performer.
Right.
Oh, I wouldn't. You know. I was going to see it from a different way. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that is part of the packaging.
And don't go for a joke on the shirt. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that's my thing. It's like it's
also that.
Yeah,
it's both.
Yeah, and it's always there.
Or you could do like Kreischer and just take your shirt off.
Yeah, I don't think that would be hilarious. If I did it, it'd be funnier than when he does it, I can tell you right
and
now. Then, also sadder at
and
the
then
same
I
time.
Could, and then I could be on the podcast and go, I remember Patrick's last performance.
Yeah.
His final
do you watch
show?
Comedians and you're just like with Chris Rock when he just did his thing that came out and he did the bit about, you know, getting slapped on the award show and stuff. Did you watch him?
I did not.
Did you see the clips of it at all?
No.
No. Okay.
No. No, but I will say this. The comedians who tell us, and this is my opinion, who tell us if you're not offending people, you're not doing your job, I think they are dead wrong. I think a comedy stage where you're there to bring levity is not the place. It's not the soapbox for you to complain about social irregularities or politics or whatever makes you mad about stuff. It's not meant for complaining.
Yeah, but there are people who want to be offended and are looking for it.
Only my opinion.
Right.
But so I just don't think offending people on purpose serves because that entire audience is there. For you and I
think it works both ways though. There are people who seek it out now. There are people who could go to one of your shows, and I pretty much I've seen Killer enough times to know a lot of his material. There are things people could pick apart and be offended by because they want to be offended. You know,
right.
And those people just need to.
But he's not meaning to.
No,
correct.
Not meaning to, but a
correct.
Lot of times,
that,
I don't know that
that's
people
my
mean
point.
To.
That is my point.
Well, like we've said all the time, there is a difference between humor and hate. And you have to be able to discern it. It's not my job for you to decide if it's humorous or hateful. It is my job to present it in a funny way. And if it's, you know, we get a laugh, okay, haha, it was not meant to be, you know, some kind of venom towards anybody. And, you know, people listening to the show sometimes don't hear things the way that you mean them. And it's not my job for you to interpret the way my words. It is my job to throw it out there. Hopefully it connects and we all laugh together. But if not, sorry, moving on. And let's go to the next one. But there are people who want to complain. We get it on a pretty regular basis. And I'm sure, you know, if they wanted to, they could complain about you.
I'm sure, man.
Shifting back to those shows, I do want to do more crowd work. I watch comedians do really good crowd work and I'm envious of it. I'm like, I wish I had that muscle. I have it. I just don't do it in my set. I feel like especially as the opening act, I should go out there.
Right.
Talk to a couple people and the, you know, Like,
and I still do crowd work. I crowd work. You know, I'm not poo-pooing crowd work at all, man. Because
you just do it in a
really
in a much
funny
more
way.
Oh yeah, you do it in a much more friendly, positive way than a lot of these guys do. But a lot of people are doing really genuinely good, just making funny comments about what's going on in the room or what, like you said, Leno saying, "What do you do for a living?" And he can make jokes about that. Just he was ready to go. It would just turn it into something funny. We do that when we would do our shows at game night. We just talk to people, and then it just the humor just comes out of that. That's what the whole point of the games was. And game night was just in a chance to interact with people and hopefully find another joke.
That's right.
But I'm definitely going to try that in Lafayette when it's like
and that just make sure it's fun. You know, that's the thing. Don't complain your way through it. That's you know, build people up, man. That's something else that we should all be doing, whatever we're doing.
200 drunk Cajuns. Well, that's what we're going to get.
Well, you have
Lafayette,
common
Louisiana.
Ground. You're going to do great.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be fantastic.
And I know you'll be kind of tipsy
I'll also be a drunk Cajun.
But
it'll be fantastic.
I also think playing the part of that is also effective. Like, it wasn't Dean Martin, like, during the whole time that they were doing all the Vegas stuff, wasn't he drinking apple juice, playing the part of the drunk? And he was able to stay sharp by not actually being drunk. And he was better at being the funny guy.
I've heard that both ways. I've heard that he was actually hammered, and I've heard that he was faking it. So, you know, maybe sometimes he was, maybe sometimes he wasn't.
Who is this? I don't know.
Dean Martin.
I've never heard of him.
You never heard of Dean Martin?
Yeah, that's a joke.
Oh, for a second, I was like, really? Wow.
Well, good. Well, do you think Patrick is how – so he started out, like, let's say an average is a C – on stage. Is he up to a B yet? Is
yes.
C plus?
I would say yes.
He's okay,
I would
good.
Say yes.
You're improving. That's great.
That's good.
So he's appears to be much more at ease on stage. And that's a big part of the art form is appearing. That's the whole art form. Don't let them know you're wigging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, every show is hard or could be.
Oh, it's terrifying.
So, and if things aren't going
just
right.
I never get more
right,
nervous than when we're sitting backstage.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And there are people like pay extra for a photo op or a meet and greet with Bees. And so he's doing all of his meet and greets, signing autographs, taking pictures. And I'm just sitting in the corner just sweating.
Yeah,
so terrifying.
It's tough, man. It's hard to, you know, because there's no, it's not a team sport.
No. Yeah, you're out there. It's all you. And it's,
that's why I would never do it. I would never, ever, ever in a million years even try it.
It's terrifying.
It's
I tell you that right now, dude.
You guys were talking about the muscle. It's a completely different muscle than what we do. I could come here in the radio station, take calls, and banter all day. Mm-hmm. But, man, standing in front of them with a routine and, you know, you think your home run joke is it, and then all of a sudden it bombs, and then you're like, oh, my God, well, the next one's not as good. And in your head, you're thinking that already before you even get to the joke, and that's terrifying.
That's what I tell the new guys. They go, Beats, what does it take? And I say, it takes getting your heart broken 1,000 times. You have to build that scar tissue so that you're not as afraid to try new stuff.
Well, and then you're in good luck. You're in good hands, Pat. I'm sure your heart
already has
scar
plenty
tissue.
Of scar tissue.
That
was a fat joke. Yeah, and there's that.
It's probably hard. Is it hard for you to get away from just doing fat jokes?
Me?
Yeah.
I try to. I mean, I try to not do too many because I remember Ralphie saying that he never wanted to do fat jokes because it was too easy. You know? And I see
the joke
that,
is already
you know,
there.
The joke's already there.
Yeah, you do squeeze some of them in. That was a fat joke.
No. to not tell jokes about it is almost dishonest. You know,
you can
address
it.
Why is that?
Because it's so much of my personality. I've been this big my whole life. And so much of the stories that are funny to me come from me being a big dude. But it's not too much of what
the
I do.
The audience isn't judging you like that.
Oh, yeah,
that's
are.
Something that, nope, oh. That's something
I also
else
think
to the, be aware of.
Yeah, but isn't something specific, like if Patrick is specifically saying, you know, in whatever the story may be, that this person was blah, blah, blah because I'm a big guy, I think that
specificity. Like I have a couple of jokes about going to the big and tall store and how you walk in and it's 55 degrees. because they know their audience, you know, like you walking in. But even if you're not fat, you get that. But I mean, that's, we know that's funny because it's true. It's just a story.
Well, and you know, and that's the point. It is telling the truth. Yeah. So I mean, I get that.
But I also think that you just standing there, like, it's just like his voice.
Mm-hmm.
His voice. He doesn't have to tell jokes about his voice. It is what it is. So he can do material that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But because of his voice, it's funnier. And you can do his accent.
Right.
So you can do content that is has nothing to do with weight,
right?
But it's still funny because of your weight.
And I can't really do that. I'm not sure I'll keep doing this. But there were a couple of shows where I was able to do. I was making fun of Roy and how he laid on the floor and how he didn't like to, you know, do tummy time the way. And so part of that joke is for me to get down on the floor and imitate him.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably not funny if you do it, but when I did it, it's sure. hilarious because I'm a big fat guy. And I get down like, yeah. And then again, the joke is that I get down there and I said, there's like a moment of silence where I go, I didn't think this through. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get back up now. Yeah. And then you get a laugh from everybody. And then when you actually get up, everybody claps because you got the fat guy can stand. You know,
but then I would think you would want, because I think the audience is in a. It kind of puts them in a weird place because they don't know if they should laugh sometimes with fat stuff, you know? And so, I don't know. I would move on after that.
And I'll say this, though. That's not the theme of his stand-up.
Good. No, it's
good.
Not.
I want to say that. It's not the theme.
Oh, that was good.
But so, it's just part of who I am. So you go there.
Right.
You know? Yeah. That's why I like comedian. Like Bees is a Southern comedian, but that's not all of his jokes are not based on that.
Right.
It's just like a black comic that doesn't do stuff that if you could tell if there are some jokes in your set that another comic could tell, then any other then there's some universality to it. You know, if all you're doing is standing there telling fat jokes because you're a fat guy, and then you know it's a little bit cheap. It's just like female comics who only tell jokes about being a woman. Like I couldn't tell any of those jokes; they wouldn't be funny.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Actually, I was.
You would laugh at that. Yeah,
I laugh at everything.
I mean,
I appreciate people just bring. You know, it's one of those things. You know, you talked about it. You have the choice to start your day grumpy or not.
Right.
I like people who go out and actively try to make people feel better, do better, be better. The whole thing, and comedy is a very important part of that. And you know. You wake up, people make fun of dad jokes all the time. Dad jokes are great because you might throw out 10 or 15 and they're like, ugh. But then you get them with one and they go, ah! And then all their friends are like, your dad's the funniest one. And they all, their friends like you more, everything. It's just, if you go out and you try to make people smile, you're going to miss sometimes. It's like a shotgun. Not every BB hits, but when they do, you've got them and you made a connection. And it's a positive connection rather than something ugly. That you could be doing.
That's a good way to put that, Bubba. Good going, man.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Positive, always positive.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoy the deconstructing stand-up comedy. It's really interesting.
Well, you can come see our shows because we're playing. Well, Bees is at Zany's this weekend.
Correct.
And you are?
That's right. We're playing in Lafayette, Louisiana on the 30th, and then Alexandria on the 31st, and Baton Rouge on April Fool's Day.
So. Okay.
If you're anywhere near any of those, come see us.
Check them out.
And if you want to see a bunch of drunk Cajuns come to that Lafayette show, it's going to be
Or just go crazy. To their house.
Or just go to, yeah, that's right.
What's the website?
Killerbees.com.
Yeah, killerbees.com. And Facebook, Killer Bees Comedy. Spell B-E-A-Z, because we did not know any better.
Yeah, good. You like Tim McGraw?
Yes.
Good, because he's coming on.
Yep.
He's up next.
That's right. Bubba?
Oh, you mean after the thing? I'm sorry. I was texting my son. What's more important than my son, my child?
The job that we're doing right now.
Oh, yeah.
He works very hard.
Oh, I think she does repeat it.
Yes.
He works very hard.
You know, she's so proud of Killer Bees. You know why?
He works very hard.
She's so proud of Patrick. Why?
He works very hard.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show.
Thank you, Bees.
On the radio.
We love you. We love you.
It was the podcast.
I'm sorry. You're very hard.
What's up, guys?
Tim McGraw, what's up, brother?
I'm just hanging out, you know, talking to y'all.
Oh, well, I'm glad you are. By the way, Tim, once again, stepping up and hitting another one out the park and making us go, oh, man. And making us look at ourselves.
Yeah, look at our lives and see if we're doing it right, doing it wrong.
Oh, my God.
Why do you do this to us, man?
Why?
I'm doing it for myself.
Do you...
I'm trying to learn.
Do you feel like as we all age, you know, that happens, and of course we all get older, but do you feel like things change in the way, like, songs that you are attracted to, like, different than the, like, you were in your 20s and 30s as you get older? And like, it's like this, it's very retrospective.
This is not Down on the Farm. This is much more humble and kind and live like you were dying. Standing Room Only, by the way, is the song we're talking about.
Yeah,
you know, in some ways, yes. You know, the older you get and the more life you've lived, songs hit you differently for sure. But, I still have the same barometer that I've always had for songs, just finding great songs that are written well and are trying to write them, you know, however that turns out. Sometimes it turns out, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, when a song like this comes around that really makes you think and something that's got this sort of a lyric to it, like Standing Room Only has, and also has a lot of energy behind it as well as a record. Those are rare when you find those kind of songs. Those kind of songs that really have a life affirmation sort of meaning to them, and songs that really have a lot to say, but feel like an up-tempo song in a lot of ways. And those are special, and when you find stuff like that, I can't wait to get in the studio and record it.
I saw there was a video I think you posted, maybe TikTok or something, but you're in your old your SUV. You still have that truck?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can't get rid of that.
What is it?
It's got too many memories.
It's an old Escalade. Is it Escalade? Is it what it is?
Yeah, an Escalade. I think it's 17 or 18 years old. I'm not quite sure how old it is, but somewhere around that area.
I still love
listening to music, listening to my mixes. I know that stereo like the back of my hand. I know how it sounds. I know how everything's supposed to sound in there. So that's sort of my go-to listening.
Isn't that hilarious? Isn't that funny? Like, Elvis would do that kind of stuff. He would have it mixed to at the time, a transistor radio was all the rage. And so he would have them mix the song through a transistor radio.
So he could listen to it the way
everybody
else would.
Because he's like, this is the way they're going to hear it. So I want to hear it.
Everybody's going to hear it. And I also, I do that, and then I listen on the little earbuds, too, because most people listen on the earbuds. So it's got to sound good on there as well.
That's smart. Yeah. So I have to say, it seems like every artist that we talk to or comes in or whatever mentions you. And some of them is for music, you know, like, yeah, you know, he's a mentor or whatever. But you know what most of it is? You single-handedly, Tim, have gotten Nashville artists into shape. Everyone.
Everybody says the same thing. Yeah, just trying to keep up with Tim McGraw.
Just trying to keep up with Tim.
I don't know. They're probably cussing me if they've been on the road with me.
Yeah. Who was it that was with you? Who was that? Do you remember? They're like, yeah, I was on the road with Tim, and he was like, dude, he's like he's they not would, playing around.
They said that you would do a workout before the actual workout, and then you would do a workout after the workout.
So insane.
Well, you know, I got to do something with my day. I can't just sit around and be bored on the bus all day.
Well, you could play golf. There's a lot of things you can do.
I haven't got to golf yet. I'm scared if I start playing golf, I won't quit and I won't do anything else.
Tim McGraw joining us. The song that is getting so much attention, that's the new one from him, called Standing Room Only. This is the track that's coming from. When is the album? Do we have a date on when the new album's coming out?
Don't have a date, but it's going to be early fall.
Okay.
Coming with a new album. We're putting the finishing touches on it now. The hardest part's going to be deciding what songs go on it and what songs get left off.
Sure.
I mean, you go in the studio and record these great songs, and not all of them make it. That's the hardest part when you have to leave stuff on the floor.
Hey, can I I just want to shift gears. I got to go 1883 because we haven't talked much since then. Whose idea was it to put Faith in the show? Was it you? Did they go after you first or her first?
Well, what happened was Taylor, I got a call one night from Taylor Sheridan, and I'd never met him before, and he sort of just cold called me and got my number, and he wanted me to come on and do a flashback or do a scene, a story on Yellowstone, and we talked for a little while, and I'd asked him, you know, I'd love to do something on Yellowstone. I just don't want to be, you know, another singing cowboy that gets taken to the train station. So if we come up with a cool role, then I'd be happy to do it. And he called me back about a week later, and he had the idea of doing the flashback of being the original veteran that founded the ranch. And then he said, you're going to have a wife in this. Do you think Faith would want to do it? And I asked Faith, and she said, of course, we'll go do it. What do we got to lose? We go spend a couple of weeks in Montana and shoot this couple flashback episodes. And little did we know it was going to lead to a whole series.
Well, I was going to say that Faith, I mean, dude, you're a great actor. We've talked about that before. Faith, I don't know why, but she was the standout. The day that the episode where she was riding the horse and she's like showing, hey, Mama can do this too. I was like, dude, look at Faith. Just, it's like a, I don't know. She never got the props that she deserved. And I love the fact that both of you were able to be spotlighted in the show.
Oh, it was great. She did a great job. I was impressed by her every single day. And she got so good on that wagon, too, which is not an easy thing to do, to drive those wagons. And she got pretty efficient on that thing.
Did they practice?
The riding, all of it was great. We had such a great time. I grew up riding, so being on horseback all day was heaven for me.
Do they have like a
cowboy camp?
Like a camp that, like, for people who've never done any of that before?
They did. They had a cowboy camp, a couple of weeks of cowboy camp, where everybody, sort of the cast, got to know each other, and we went through all of our training and you know, arms training and horseback training, and we roped and drove wagons. We spent 2 weeks of doing that every day, all day long. So everybody got pretty good pretty quickly.
It always tripped me out, like whenever I'm watching like 1883 and then I'll watch Yellowstone, the lady who plays your sister is also the lady who's, manipulating Jamie. It's weird.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right.
It's the same actress, yeah.
Oh, she's a time jumper.
That's right. So, you know, Morgan released like 36 songs, and we're starting to see more and more artists release differently than it used to be. It used to be like, here's an album with...
Here's 12 songs.
12 songs and...
Or three. It's either 12, three, or four, and then it's done.
Yeah, we saw that whole, like, three... Do you see it changing? Do you put any thought to that at all?
A little bit. I mean, I'm still an album guy. I mean, the more songs, the better, I think. I mean, I think that you get to hear the work in context. You know, when you have a whole album and you get to listen to a lot of songs, and you can sort of see, you know, where the artist's head was at and what we were thinking when we were making the record and the sounds and everything. And I think it makes more sense to listen to an album after you've heard a single. Just having a single stand on its own.
I think it would be so cool.
I'm old school that way. I like albums.
Well, like, because I just think about all the songs that you dropped from albums that nobody's ever heard. You could probably just hit stuff and go, old stuff you've never heard, and that's the album. And it would be like 45 songs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of them out there. I mean, maybe my kids will make some money off of them.
The new one, it's called Standing Room Only from Tim McGraw. Look forward to the album coming out later on this year. Tim, always the best. Give our love to Faith, and we'll talk to you soon.
Will do. Good talking to you.
See you, man.
Take care.
Bye.